Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller Podcast for the 27th day of November 2019. It's a Wednesday, the day that a lot of those long weekends, for the people who didn't take off Monday and Tuesday, it's when the weekend can start, sort of, at noon. Does anybody really work on this day? I'm Derek. I mean, you show up to work, but do you do anything? Probably not. I don't know that I've had a professional job, or any other job for that matter, where a whole lot was getting done on the day before Thanksgiving, except when I worked retail. Oh, those were the days. Anyway, I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening, telling a friend, tuning in, rating and reviewing, spreading the word just in general this Thanksgiving. I encourage you to grab your family members' phones and subscribe them to the show and then force them to listen to it. Maybe not the force them part, but subscribe them to it. Tell them about it. Extol the virtues. Hell, liberals tell you to ruin Thanksgiving by bitching about health care and telling them the virtues of socialized medicine. How about you spread back right at cousin pajama boy and you say, no, you need to listen to this, you little mocha drinking sissy. And then get, well, he probably won't subscribe. It'll make him cry, but making him cry at the dinner table, I look at as a victory. Anyway, so thanks for all you do on that front. Email me if you want to enter to win a signed copy of Rich Lowry's book, Derek@dailycaller.com. Spell it with me. You've heard it 1,000 times. D-E-R-E-K. Well, just keep sending the email until you, whatever spellings you go through, sooner or later you're going to get it right. And let me know that you want to be entered into the drawing. And so it is written, so it shall be done. Was Thanksgiving the one? I think, was it Thanksgiving or Easter? One of those holidays always showed the Ten Commandments on TV. Always. Long, incredible movie. Let my people go, Pharaoh. One thing I never understood about the movie The Ten Commandments, or the story in general, but definitely the movie of Ten Commandments, I'm much more familiar with that than I am with the biblical telling of it, is Pharaoh and Charlton Heston, Moses, were brothers, or raised as brothers. They got along really well. And then he comes back after he's, you know, discovered to be a Jewish child and sent off to be a slave and sent off into the wilderness and whatever, and then finds the burning bush. When he comes back, there's a real awkward, stilted familiarity between him and his brother. The conversation is Pharaoh this and Pharaoh that. I think you could, I don't know, somebody you pulled up, grew up next to, you could probably go, hey, you know, look, we got to talk. I got to tell you something. And the other guy would go, that seems crazy to me, but if you say it, I have no reason to doubt your word. Not that they would have ever worked it out like that, but the acting, it's just the 1950s epic acting is very, it reminds me of stage acting. You know, when you're up on a stage doing a play, you've got to really sort of exaggerate everything so that everyone in the audience sees it and hears it and whatever. In film, you don't have to do that. And stage acting does not translate well to film, I've found. Although stage acting now is much better because they have hidden microphones and you can hear the people and that little weird dot in the top of their forehead because the mic sticks out of their hair. But anyway, this is all irrelevant information. But, you know, when a thought occurs to me, I can't help but spew it. And that's why I don't remember. Thanksgiving seems like there was always some sort of movie that was on every year, edited for television, as if we took this monster epic and said, you know what, it needs to be longer with commercial breaks. No. Anyway, like I said, we got a lot of stuff to get to. Latest polling numbers, President Obama sort of reinserting himself in the Democratic process. Will he come out and say something against Bernie Sanders if Bernie is the nominee or takes the lead? That'll be interesting to watch. Pete Buttigieg is making black voters angry. Actually, Democrats in general are making black voters angry. It's just, it's fun to sit back and watch, to be perfectly honest with you. I love it when the woke mob returns home to destroy. Fire, bad. Choice in education, bad. Anyway, we'll get to all of that and more. But first, let me tell you about Ancient Life Oil. And don't fast forward. Stop. I know you're going to fast forward, but don't do it. I still have the taste of the CBD oil in my mouth. A lot of you write in or you've written comments. Like, hey, do you really use it? I don't think you really use that stuff. I really do use that stuff. I literally have the taste of the chocolate mint CBD oil in my mouth as I speak. That's why I might be salivating a little bit. But more importantly than the taste is the effects. From Ancient Life Oil, CBD oil, it's a natural remedy with the purest ingredients. It's coconut and hemp oils, and it's not going to get you high. Don't worry about that. It does make you feel better. The little aches and pains, my eye stress, that's my big problem, is eye stress, goes away within a couple of minutes at the most. It's amazing what happens when you put this stuff under your tongue. And like I said, it's not going to get you high. I've been high many, many times in my life. Been a while, but I've been high. This is not that. This is better. This is good. This is the feeling you want to have, where you don't have those little joint aches, whatever is ailing you before. But don't take my word for it. Just go to your favorite search engine and search CBD oil benefits and see what happens. Read the testimonials. See what people are saying. And then when you're ready to give it a shot, go to ancientlifeoil.com. Enter promo code Derek at checkout. You get 10% off your order. 10% off. You can't beat that deal. Try it and you'll be a believer just like I was. It's not snake oil. It's not garbage. It's not hocus pocus. It is real. How it's real, I don't know. That it is real, that I do know and can attest to. Find out why at the grocery store, they're selling gutter CBD oil behind where they sell the cigarettes and the lottery tickets and everything. Everywhere you go, they're selling CBD oil. There's a reason for it. Find it out. And when you're ready to try, go to ancientlifeoil.com. All one word, ancientlifeoil.com. Use promo code Derek at checkout and you get 10% off your bill. You can't beat the deal. Try it once, you'll be convinced. Anyway, thank you for that. I really do use the stuff. It's great. The little dropper, I just put it under my tongue and boom, better. Better. That sort of low grade, I've been staring at a computer screen or reading print that's too small for too long. It's gone. Gone, baby. Gone. Plus, you helped the program. And if you want to help the program other ways, somebody sent me PayPal today. That was nice. I appreciate that. And there's the patreon.com/Derek Hunter podcast. I am upgrading the software and equipment and everything like that. A programming note, tomorrow's show, Thanksgiving, while you're in your tryptophan coma, and Friday's show, barring any major massive news happening, and let's all hope that it doesn't, will be interviews from the past rehash. I'm going to try and go back as far as I can and get some interesting sort of deep cuts, if you will, interviews. The problem is I have to still have the audio on my computer somewhere because otherwise I can't do it. I could go back and re-record the interview on YouTube, but my recording software only records 2 minutes and 59 seconds at a time. Really good software is expensive. And the freeware stuff cuts off at 3 minutes for some weird reason. So it just you don't need to know that either. I don't know. Sooner or later, I'm going to get to something in this show that you need to know. I will very, very soon. But thank you for everything that you guys do on Thanksgiving. Know that I'm thankful for you. And I'll record new intros to each of the interviews and see if I can't remember to give some little insights into the person that came in, or maybe two people. I don't know what kind of show I'm going to string together. I'm actually going to do it each day. So, if something massive breaks, I'll get to it. But let's hope it doesn't, and we can just have a great, happy Thanksgiving. Okay, where to start, where to begin? Like I said, you go into this and you think, well, Tuesday was kind of a slow news, or, you know, Monday was kind of a slow news day, so Tuesday's going to be nothing. Tuesday's going to be even slower, and all I'll be able to talk about is Black Friday. And by the way, I am a massive proponent of Black Friday. I love a deal. I love a bargain. I love that stuff. I used to go out all the time. I probably still will go out on Black Friday, meaning Thursday. I love on Thanksgiving Day going out and getting the newspaper when it's really, really thick, just for all the sales papers, all the sales circulars. And I comb through them and I see if there's anything that's like amazing deal. And if it's a doorbuster, I'm down with it. I'm ready to, you know, trample grandma to get to a TV that's $50 off. Not so much anymore. Right now I have all the TVs that I need, probably too many TVs. I've got my feet resting on a 32-inch tube TV right now that weighs about 350 pounds. The thing is gigantic. I got it off Craigslist for free. All I had to do was go pick it up and give myself a hernia loading it into the car, which it barely fit in. It's a Kia Soul, and it barely fit in the damn thing. But it's for retro gaming. I love the Nintendo 64. And it looks like crap on a HD TV, but it looks great on these old monsters. But these things, I worked at Best Buy when this was the TV of the time. So damned heavy. Oh, and you used to stack them up four high on that Big Joe sort of hydraulic lift thing. Anyway, someday I'll go through all of my jobs. Maybe I'll do that around Christmas time. Give a little note about each one. That'll be like a week's worth of shows, considering I've had so many. So yeah, I love Black Friday. So if you're interested in Black Friday, there's a website, bfads.com, and they have scans of all the ads. They've had them for a while. They keep uploading them as they get them. And for years, in the weeks leading up to Black Friday, I look at, find the best deal. Where's the best deal on this? Now it's sadly to the point that I'm not looking for fun stuff for myself. Not sadly. I'm going, what toy can I give my kids? Where can I save money on toys? And I'm horrible when it comes to stuff for other people. If I did all my Christmas shopping on Black Friday, I would come home and want to give it to them right then. That's why I usually shop last minute. Black Friday is for me and shopping Christmas Eve, which I also do. I don't know, maybe because I hate myself, is for other people. Because if I buy something 2 weeks in advance, my wife buy her something that I know she wants. She goes, you want your gift now? You sure you do want your gift now? I'm ready to give it to her. Like, you want it? You want it? I'll give it to you. And so I love giving stuff away, but I ruin surprises try to. Anyway, she's much better at saying no, she doesn't want it. She's willing to wait. Kids won't wait. So I'm going to have to wait on buying the kids. Anyway, more informazioni that you didn't need. So let's get into the news, shall we? President Obama. Have you heard of this guy, Barack Obama? I think he's got a promising future in the Democratic Party. He is out there remaining silent on the Democratic field. But, well, he's remaining publicly silent on the Democratic race. Privately, apparently, he's been saying quite a bit and preparing himself for insertion. Is that dirty to say? Barack Obama is preparing himself for insertion. But it seems as though he is. He is worried about the Democrats losing again, as he should be, because their field is full of insane people who are horrible candidates. And one in particular, apparently, has his ire, and another one who you would think would have his support, or at least his favor a little bit, maybe not so much. The Hill has the first story. President Barack Obama privately said he would speak up to stop Senator Bernie Sanders from becoming the Democratic presidential nominee, Politico reported Tuesday. The former president reportedly said if Sanders held a strong lead in the Democratic primary, he would speak out to prevent him from becoming the nominee. A close advisor to Obama told Politico he could not confirm whether Obama would stand up against Sanders. Quote, "He hasn't said that directly to me. The only reason I'm hesitating at all is because, yeah, if Bernie were running away with it, I think maybe we would all have to say something. But I don't think that's likely. It's not happening." End quote. That is what the Obama advisor, a close Obama advisor, means. This is interesting on many fronts because I would challenge most people to tell me what the difference is between Bernie Sanders and, say, really any of them to a large degree, but in particular, Elizabeth Warren. A case could be made that Elizabeth Warren is more Bernie Sanders than Bernie Sanders is. She's got the wealth tax, she's got the rich people tax, she's got the this tax, the other tax, she got the free college and the loan forgiveness. Everything that Bernie Sanders has sold or tried to sell, Elizabeth Warren is right there beside him trying to outdo him. She's just as crazy, just as far-left radical socialist. Now, the others all have their own, I mean, like a Kamala Harris is just as crazy, too, but Kamala Harris is a car with the wheels falling off, driving down an icy street. It's just over for her. She just doesn't want to apparently spend time with her family, so she's decided to spend time, her pride. That's the thing about this. Most people stay in well past their sell-by date, and it's because of pride. That's all it is. There's no reason for her to be in this race. She's lost. It's not going to happen. She's running out of money. But then again, the front runner is running out of money. Joe Biden is not exactly cashing in and getting a lot of support. So it'll be interesting anyway to see if President Obama will come out and say anything. Earlier this month, Obama said, quote, look, we have a field of very accomplished, very serious and passionate and smart people who have a history of public service. And whoever emerges from the primary process, I will work my tail off to make sure that they are the next president. So apparently, whoever the nominee is, Obama will work for, but he's going to do his damnedest to make sure that Bernie Sanders isn't the nominee. Which is going to actually, you know, now that I think about it, that could be a double-edged sword for Bernie. Yeah, the establishment Democrats who worship the ground that Barack Obama floats above will not come around to Bernie Sanders. They will be anti-Bernie Sanders. That being said, I think they're already anti-Bernie Sanders. I think that crowd is Hillary Clinton's base. I think that crowd is the establishment of the Democratic Party who don't like Bernie Sanders because he's not even a Democrat. They'll steal his ideas, but they don't like the man personally. So the other people, however, the rest of them, the people who seem to be migrating toward Pete Buttigieg, might be intrigued because they're not fans of Barack Obama either. And the enemy of my enemy is my friend sort of scenario that could be created by this leaking out. And trust me, whoever this Obama advisor is, in quotes, is not speaking out of school. They're looking at the polls. Biden is sort of floundering. Elizabeth Warren is kind of slipping. Pete Buttigieg is going up a little bit. But right there, right within striking distance all the time, and never really been outside of striking distance, is Bernie Sanders. Bernie will do well in Iowa. He almost won Iowa. It was 0.2 percentage points that separated him and Hillary Clinton in 2016, and he won New Hampshire. New Hampshire is right next to Vermont. That's basically his home state. Once you start building some momentum, you can have a lot of problems. Now, there wasn't much momentum to be built in 2016 because there were only two candidates. The Democratic Party made sure to plow the road for Hillary. Martin O'Malley doesn't count, and Lincoln Chafee doesn't count when it comes to other candidates. This time, there are a lot of candidates. So somebody with 20% of the vote in either one of those states, since they come so quickly after each other, is likely going to be the winner. Now, it presents a more interesting problem down the road because Democrats are so crazy and they screwed up so badly in 2016 that they changed their whole primary process, in addition to the fact that they don't really like competition, that they don't do a winner-takes-all sort of primary. They do a winner takes most or some, and everybody else gets a piece. They apportion out their delegates. Well, if you have to get to 50% plus one of the delegates to win the nomination, and you have a field of 18 people going into these early primaries, and they've bunched them together because all these states want to, you know, pretend to matter. They want a piece of the pie in the advertising and campaign dollars. They have... You could end up with a situation where nobody can actually get to 50% plus one of the delegates They just won't have the ability. If you're splitting, even if you're splitting the delegates five or six ways and somebody's still getting, you know, 40% of them, they could end up not getting there. And you could end up with a brokered convention, which now that I think about it, if I want to get all conspiratorial, I said last week or the week before, the only circumstances under which Hillary Clinton would get in this race is in a brokered convention situation where there's a mess going into there. And after a couple of rounds of votes, they throw their hands up and say, we can't pick any of these people. We can now look externally. I could see Hillary Clinton riding in on a multicolored horse, straining its back to save the day. I think that's entirely plausible. And the Democratic establishment around Barack Obama is also, you know, the Democratic establishment in many ways that lives in a Venn diagram with Hillary Clinton. This leaking of this information about Bernie Sanders, it could be strategic by Clinton Incorporated. Because there's another little bit of leak of information that's in that Politico story that would also help feed this conspiracy that I'm cooking up. This one from Mediaite. A new report on former President Barack Obama suggests the former president does not... Why do you use former president twice in one sentence right after each other? Bad writing. A new report on former President Barack Obama suggests he... would have been the better way to do it. The former president doesn't have faith in Joe Biden's chances to connect with voters in states like Iowa that made his 2008 campaign successful. Politico's Ryan Lizer reported on the 2020 Democratic candidates who met Obama in his office in D.C. this year, seeking his advice on how to win the White House. Lizer reported that as Obama provided advice to the candidates who met with him, it also gave him a chance to learn about them so he and his advisors can figure out who is the most likely person to defeat President Donald Trump. Here is what was Obama's big takeaway, according to Lizza. Quote, sometimes he offers candid advice about his visitors' strengths and weaknesses with several lesser-known candidates, according to people who have talked to him or have been briefed on his meetings. He was blunt about the challenges of breaking out of a large field. His advice is not always heeded. He told Patrick earlier, Deval, earlier this year that it was likely too late for him to secure the money and talent if he jumped in the race. Occasionally, he can be cutting. With one candidate, he pointed out during his own 2008 campaign, he had an intimate bond with the electorate, especially in Iowa, that he no longer has. Then he added, quote, and you know who really doesn't have it? Joe Biden, end quote. Joe Biden doesn't have the juice. Joe Biden doesn't have the connection with the voters, particularly in Iowa, out of the gate. And make no mistake about it. Joe Biden, more than anybody else in the field, needs to win Iowa. Okay, maybe Kamala Harris needs to win Iowa more because she's pulled out and shut down shop every place else. But like Michael Bloomberg is not running in Iowa. He's not running anywhere until Super Tuesday. He's got enough money that he doesn't care and he can do that. Everybody else is sort of vying for Iowa. But if you're the front runner and you are and have been the front runner since before you even announced, and the first race out of the gate you lose, it is going to be embarrassing for you. It's going to be very tough for him to reconnect, especially when the next state a few days later is New Hampshire. And you have two senators running who are from the area, Massachusetts in Elizabeth Warren and Vermont in Bernie Sanders. Now, they're splitting the bat crap crazy vote. So, well, Biden has that going for him. But Pete Buttigieg is surging up there. If Biden can win Iowa, he can maybe parlay that into, no matter what happens in New Hampshire, being able to spring forward to South Carolina, where he is the next, that's where the next one is, and he is surprisingly strong because of his support among black voters. But if he loses Iowa, and loses New Hampshire. I can't think of a time, maybe there is one time, but it certainly didn't end super well. I can't really think of a time where somebody's firewall actually served as a firewall. Rudy Giuliani in 2012, his firewall was Florida. He was putting all his efforts into Florida. That was a huge failure because he'd racked up a bunch of losses before he got to Florida, and momentum matters in politics. There's a lot of bandwagon jumping in politics. Marco Rubio, again, he kind of was doing okay, but not really winning in 2016. His firewall was Florida, the state that elected him. You would think that he would do well there, and he lost. He kind of got humiliated by the size of his defeat in Florida, and he dropped out after that. Then Florida renominated him for senator, and he won re-election as senator. But it doesn't matter. If just because you're willing to vote for somebody in a primary or in a statewide election doesn't mean you're going to get their support. The momentum you bring in matters. Plus, it's like a job interview, an extended job interview, and it's a different job. Maybe they like you in your current job, but you're just better suited for that job than the one you're running for. So the Democratic field is a bit of a mess. Personally, I'm absolutely loving it. Loving it. If it was at McBurger King or McBurger King, is it Burger King? I'm loving it. Whoever it is that I'm loving it slogan comes from, I'm loving it. Speaking of loving it, the Quinnipiac University, their polling outfit, in addition to being a horrible university, I'm sure. They're pretty reliable in their polls, however, but they're finding that the Democratic field is getting screwed up. I mentioned this or alluded to this earlier, I think, about Elizabeth Warren. It's not good to be Elizabeth Warren. She may be one of the only candidates, if not the only candidate, who the more voters have a chance to hear from her, the less they like. That means she's a better concept than reality. And she's a horrible concept. They have a press release. Former Vice President Joe Biden has retaken the lead in Democratic primary race for president as Senator Elizabeth Warren's numbers have plummeted, according to a Quinnipiac University poll released today, yesterday. Biden receives 25% of the vote among Democratic voters and independent voters who lean Democratic, while South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg gets 16%. Warren receives 14% and Bernie Sanders 13%. So you think, well, how's that bad? What's wrong with that? Third place, man, that's bronze medal. I mean, you can still pawn that and pay a month's rent or something. Well, it matters because not where she is as much as where she is relative to where she was. In an October poll, the same poll 1 month ago, October 24th, Warren was at 28%. And to save you from breaking out the calculator function, that is losing half of your support. 14 from 28 is 14. Biden had 21%. Sanders was at 15 and Mayor Pete was at 10. So Pete gained 6. Joe Biden gained 3. Bernie Sanders lost 1, which is essentially a statistical rounding error, but Elizabeth Warren lost 14%, half of her support. That is massive, massive, massive. And if you think back to the last month, because that's when this poll was conducted, over the last month, think back to the last month for Elizabeth Warren. What really happened? Was there a major scandal involving Elizabeth Warren? Was there a major outrage spurred by Elizabeth Warren? Not really. She had her I was fired because I was pregnant thing, but the mainstream media and local media, by and large, covered that up. Was it any of her other bogus claims coming back to haunt her? Not really. Was it her claim that she didn't send her kids to private school when she did send her son to private school? No, that just happened. That wouldn't register in this poll. So what happened? The reality is people began to listen to her. People began to pay attention. Once she reached the front of the pack, people said, oh, okay, I better decide or find out what this person is about. She seems to be doing well in the polls, and there's a possibility she will become my party's nominee. And suddenly, they all said, or half of them said, well, you know what, I'm out of here. We got to get out of here. I got to get away from this stuff because this is crazy. The only candidate who, when people are paying attention, when people are open, when people are interested in hearing what you have to say and possibly being sold, it's like walking onto a car lot and you're bound and determined to buy a new Pontiac. Do they even make, I think they still make Pontiacs. You're bound and determined to buy a new Pontiac, and you're bound and determined to buy a new Pontiac today. You just don't know which Pontiac. And you go out there and you look at all the Pontiacs and you go, you know what, I'm going to go buy a Ford. I'm not interested. I'm going to go buy a used Yugo. I'm going to buy anything else. Because you look up close at the Pontiacs and you're like, oh my God, these cars are ugly. They don't seem to run very well. They run choppy, whatever it is. Elizabeth Warren had all the advantages in the last month. The only thing that she didn't have going for her was an answer to one simple question, which I think plays right into my discussion, my belief that people paying attention to Elizabeth Warren are turned off by Elizabeth Warren. And no, it's not her hair. You pervert, or whatever. You sexist. If she had one answer, she didn't have an answer to one simple question. How are you going to pay for your health care plan? That's it. How are you going to pay for your health care plan? She had no answer for that all summer. She had no answer for that all fall. She doesn't have a very believable answer to that now, yet she's out there for a long time was saying, nobody's going to pay more. Are you going to raise taxes on the middle class to pay for Medicare for all? Nobody's going to end up paying more. That's not really the question. Are you going to? No, well, don't worry. Think of all the money you're going to save. Yeah, relative to what? Am I going to be taxed more? No, well, let's not talk about that. After a couple of weeks of that, and that went on for a couple of months, actually, but it eventually built to a crescendo to the point that she had to put together a bogus plan that says, well, we're only going to tax, well, the super-duper wealthy. We're going to tax them. And just if you make over $50 million a year, we're going to tax you a tiny percent. Don't worry about it. It's not going to impact you. Everybody knew that was garbage. And they knew that was garbage because she refused to answer the question. Like so much of life, if you just come out with the truth early, immediately, don't ever try to hide it. Don't ever try to get too cute by half. Most people will look past it. Most people will, frankly, forget about it. If Elizabeth Warren had come out, look at what Bernie Sanders has come out and said. He's going to charge everybody making over $29,000. He's going to add a 4% tax on top of that. 4 more percentage points tax to pay for his utopian socialist dream that'll end up being an absolute disaster. But at least he's being forward with this is how we're going to pay for it. Now, the money, the math doesn't add up, but that's beside the point. Conceptually, he's on the path, or at least pointing us on the path of where he's going to go, whether it's 5% or oopsie 10% or 20%, whatever it is, you know he's going to raise taxes on you. You know that because he's never really hidden it. Elizabeth Warren tried to hide it. And when you try to hide something, people will not like that. Even if they like the idea, people are going to go, I don't care for the way you're doing this. You don't come across as honest and trustworthy. And in the Democratic Party, where they're running around saying that the reason Donald Trump has to be defeated, or part of the reason, I mean, the main reason is that he exists and Democrats don't like that he exists. But if you the reason you're ready to take on Donald Trump and why Donald Trump has to be thrown out of office is he lies all the time. You can't go around lying all the time and not giving an answer is lying. What Elizabeth Warren was trying to do was lying. Nobody's going to end up paying more. But are you going to raise middle class taxes, the tax rate on middle class Americans? I'll tell you that everybody's going to save money overall. No, they're not. If you're routinely slicing off a limb and overutilizing the healthcare system, then you'll probably save money in the long term. But in the short term, provided you are not accident prone or made of glass, you likely will not save money in the long term. And the American people saw through that. That, I think, is where Elizabeth Warren's voters went. It's not that they don't agree with her that Medicare for All is out there. It's that they just don't want a BS artist coming in and trying to sell it to people. You forget, or maybe you forget, or maybe therapy has helped wipe it from your memory. But remember the debacle that was Obamacare? Remember all of the promises that Barack Obama made? Not just if you like your doctor and you like your plan, you can keep them. Not that. It was the, this is going to save the average American family $2,500 per year. And then sometimes he would say at least $2,500 per year on their premium costs. And what happened? The exact opposite happened. The 5 million people who lost their health insurance because of Obamacare were an awful situation. You feel bad for every single one of them, the health insurance they liked and the health insurance they wanted, and along with it, the doctor. But 5 million people is not enough to make the difference in how wildly unpopular in the polls Obamacare was. A lot of the reason that Obamacare was so wildly unpopular, especially in the immediate aftermath of its passage, was all of the insurance companies pointing out that all the new restrictions and requirements were going to cost a hell of a lot of money, and a hell of a lot more money than the people were told it would. They were told, and they knew, and they could see coming, that insurance premiums were going to increase dramatically, and they have increased dramatically. That was a lie of the Obama administration. And what happened to the Obama administration? Well, the next election in 2010, Republicans had an overwhelming victory, landslide victory, took back the House of Representatives, relegated Nancy Pelosi to minority leadership status. That's what happens. And Elizabeth Warren looks at that and doesn't want that to happen ahead of time. The American people listen to her and say, wait, what is she hiding? Why isn't she just coming out and telling us whether or not she's going to raise taxes? If she is, we can handle it. We're adults. But she didn't want to be that. She didn't want to do that. So she came up with this nice little three-card Monte shell game where she pretended for a long time, nobody's going to pay more, nobody's going to pay more. And then eventually she had to come out and say, well, this is how I'm going to pay for it. And the way that she came out and said, this is how I'm going to pay for it, is about as believable as she is on everything. So to see Elizabeth Warren crater like this isn't really all that shocking. That she wasn't smart enough to know this going in, and that she didn't just come out and say, here's how we're going to pay for it. Even if it's garbage, you just say, here's how we're going to pay for it. And you don't have to play cute with the math. You don't have to pretend that nobody's taxes are going to go up. I think most Democrats would have said, all right, well, if we have to pay a little bit more in taxes for utopia, that's just the way you have to do. These are people who are desperate for utopia. These are people who scramble to the government to take care of them, to look out for them or their fellow Americans. Democratic voters tend to think, by and large, especially the wealthy ones, of which there are a lot, that they can take care of themselves, but it's the rest of everybody else who can't take care of themselves, and they need big government to hold their hands. So they have no problem with government mandating people pay more. Besides the super rich, they don't really pay taxes anyway, not in the way that we know. So why not just come out and be honest? Because she thought it would hurt her in the polls. And now we're seeing that not coming out and being honest is hurting her in the polls. I mean, it couldn't happen to a nicer person. By the way, Michael Bloomberg, who just entered the race in the same Quinnipiac poll, polling 3%. 3% already. So that's tied. He's less than a week in the race, and he's tied with Kamala Harris and Amy Klobuchar. And he is 1 point ahead of Cory Booker. Cory Booker, Andrew Yang, Julian Castro, and Michael Bennett, which is a name that I always forget is even running for president, Colorado senator, all have 2%. Nobody else has tops 1%, with 11% undecided. So the Democratic field is still very much in flux, and I think that this lends a lot of credence to my their convention is going to be an absolute mess theory, which eventually, I believe, will prove that I am a freaking genius. But we already knew that, didn't we? Didn't we? We didn't? That's rude. by the way, they also pulled on impeachment. And after 2 weeks of public hearings, the numbers actually moved in the opposite direction. In October, the October 23rd poll, the pro-impeachment movement was at 48%. They get rid of Trump. And at 45% was the don't be impeached. Or no, 45% is now. It was 48% a month ago. So I was right about that. That means 3 percentage points move in favor of Trump on the don't impeach side or the do impeach side. It's even worse for Democrats. Let me try that again. I'll just read this, what it says, because I'm looking at this. While 45% of the American voters think that President Trump should be impeached and removed from office, 48% don't think he should be. In an October 23rd poll, 48% thought he should be impeached and removed, and 46% didn't think so. So after 2 weeks of impeachment hearings, essentially the numbers have flipped. It's not earth-shattering. It's still within the margin of error. But in general, that's not what you want if you're a Democrat. If you've been staking your reputation and your electoral strategy on Trump being removed, you got Trump. You can walk around and say, we got Trump. Reelect me. We got Trump. Let's do this thing. You can't. And actually, if this goes any further in the other direction, the way it is going now, it seems as though Democrats are really going to start to back down. Now you begin to see why they're looking and hoping to sort of speed up the process. They want to move more quickly on impeachment. They want to get this thing over to the Senate while people are still somewhat favorable before it goes completely underwater. It's underwater by 3 percentage points, but it is all indications, at least as of now, and Lord knows anything can change anything, but at least as of now is moving in the wrong direction. And Democrats, they're pot committed. They're pot committed to impeachment. You got Jerry Nadler, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. He announced yesterday that they're moving forward. They're ready to have hearings. And I love the way they're doing this because they believe that the American people are incredibly stupid. That's honestly what Democrats believe. If you just read between the lines of what Jerry Nadler announced yesterday, he released a statement through the committee, the Judiciary Committee. Quote, the committee intends to hold this hearing to serve as an opportunity. See, they're having an impeachment evidence hearing. The committee intends this hearing to serve as an opportunity to discuss the historical and constitutional basis for impeachment, as well as the framers' intent and understanding of terms like high crimes and misdemeanors. We expect to discuss the constitutional framework through which the House may analyze the evidence gathered in the present inquiry. We will also discuss whether your alleged actions, this is a letter to the White House, whether your alleged actions warrant the House's exercising its authority to adopt articles of impeachment. So they're doing this for show. They're doing this in the hopes, look, Adam Schiff, you could not have picked, if you're a Democrat, you could not have picked a less popular, less likable individual to be the face of impeachment. I mean, my God, you imagine being stuck in a cross-country car ride with Adam Schiff? We shall only listen to opera, and only at the prescribed volume. There shall be no talking, but I will lecture incessantly about the screenplays that I've written that have gone nowhere. Just, you'd want to throw yourself out of the car, right at the top of a gully. But he's unpleasant. He presents himself well on television in short periods of time. He talks like this, and I don't really like being here. This is a problem. This is a sad day for America. But it's completely insincere and unbelievable. Nobody sits around and goes, man, that Adam Schiff, he really seems torn up about this impeachment business. He's probably losing some sleep over what he has been forced to do in the name of his oath of office. Nobody buys that crap. They know what he's about. They've seen the lies. They've heard him promise for 2 years. We got proof of collusion, president, blah, blah, blah. You'll see it all soon. All this proof of collusion, I'll bring it out. And it's, okay, where is it? Well, you know what? Let's move on to Ukraine. Well, wait a second. You've been for 2 years accusing the president of being a puppet for Vladimir Putin. How about you produce some of that evidence that you swore to us you had? No, no, no. We've got this whistleblower now, and nobody knows who this is. I've certainly never met him. And then you find out, hey, wait, he met with your staff. You guys worked with him to set him up with a lawyer and help facilitate this whole thing. Huh, that's weird. That contradicts exactly what you said, Adam Schiff. Well, this isn't about me, and we shouldn't talk about me, and we should protect the identity of the whistleblower. In any attempt to name the whistleblower, I will gavel down. Well, how would you know there's an attempt to name the whistleblower if you don't know what the name of the whistleblower is? Moving on. Yeah, the American people watched that crap and they said, this guy is a used car salesman in a nicer suit with less of a personality. At least a used car salesman will come up to you and be like, hey, you're looking good today, even though you're not. Adam Schiff will just come up to you and say, buy this car. Buy this car. Give me your money and buy this car. We want to be wined and dined before we're bent over the bumper of a sports car. Adam Schiff doesn't do that. So those hearings were a complete and total failure. Now we're going to get Jerry Nadler, who, how to describe Jerry Nadler? He's lost some weight. He used to be gigantic. He used to look like Chet in Weird Science. When Kelly LeBrock turned him into that monster, that secreting sort of frog-like thing, that was roughly the build of Jerry Nadler. Now he's about half that, but unfortunately, he retained the personality. You know what I mean? You know, there are people who are fat but are jovial. There are people who are skinny who seem fat, just the way they act. And Jerry Nadler acts fat, obnoxious kind of fat. Pretentious New York kind of fat. He's had a long-standing beef with the president of the United States that long predates Donald Trump entering politics. Goes back to the 90s, maybe even the 80s. They've been butting heads about development and everything that went on in New York City. So he's got a vendetta. He's also got the chairmanship of the House Judiciary Committee. I'll give him this, which ain't saying a whole lot. He's certainly more charming. If you can even, I mean, it's a relative term. That's like, you know what? That pile of poop is not attractive. But that pile of poop next to that pile of guts from the deer you just gutted, I'll take the pile of poop. I'll take a picture of the pile of poop over the picture of the pile of guts. That's kind of what Jerry Nadler is next to Adam Schiff. He's the pile of guts next to the pile of Schiff. So in that sense, it's an upgrade from the Democrat, for the Democrats' perspective, but from personality perspective, I'm not sure that the American people are going to be particularly interested in what Jerry Nadler has to say in this bogus hearing that they're going to. This hearing is not a fact-finding mission. This hearing isn't even really to try to educate the American people. This hearing is designed to try to stem the tide of polling. This isn't moving the ball forward. This is trying to stop the ball from moving backward. There are no fact witnesses going to be brought in this hearing. There's nothing that's going to come to light in this hearing relevant to the case. What this is another chance with a different guy trying to convince the American people that there's some there. The problem for Democrats is pretty simple, though. There is no there. That they're not going to be able to overcome that, and they have nobody charming enough to make anybody forget that this whole thing is a fraud. Speaking of frauds, there's a story in the New York Times. It's kind of funny. You would think any rational human being would know the answer, but this is dealing with the New York Times. Two reporters, no less, put this big story together. It's a long, long story, and it also involved it's just two reporters. The headline, Minority Voters Chafe as Democratic Candidates Abandon Charter Schools. The subheadline: the front runners for the presidential nomination are moving away from the charter school movement, and Black and Latino families are asking why their concerns are lost. I suspect it actually concerns parents of all flavors and configurations, but Democrats only see race and they only care about certain races. They say, all right, the night before the Democratic presidential debate, candidates took to the stage. Black and Latino charter school parents and supporters gathered in a bland hotel conference room nearby to make signs they hoped would get the politicians' attention. The signs read, quote, charter schools equal self-determination. Another one read, Black Democrats want charters. At issue is the delicate politics of race and education. For more than two decades, Democrats have largely backed public charter schools as part of a compromise to deliver Black and Latino families a way out of failing school districts. Charters were embraced as an alternative to the taxpayer-funded vouchers for private school tuition supported by Republicans who were using the issue to woo minority voters. So that's kind of telling right there. Democrats were never really interested in charter schools to begin with. They did it because Republicans were offering an alternative to the prison system that is the horrible public school system, especially particularly in large Democrat-controlled minority-majority cities. And so they said, well, all right, we'll create better schools. It's kind of funny. The rules won't apply. We'll have better schools there. We'll hold teachers to standards, all the sorts of things that we'll introduce just a little bit of the free market for some of you students. And it'll be enough of a glimmer of hope that you guys will stop flirting with the ideas that Republicans are throwing out there. And it worked. And it worked. The school voucher system, you don't really hear the school voucher debate being advanced by anybody anymore. It's charter schools. Nothing wrong with charter schools, but a really honest, good, potentially amazing solution to the hell that is failing public schools around the country is competition, is the ability of parents to choose. I thought Democrats were pro-choice, but again, they're only pro-choice on one thing. Everything else, they're pro, do it my way or go to hell. So now Democrats are running out there and changing their tune on charter schools. Back to the Time story, it says, but this year, in a major shift, leading Democratic candidates are backing away from charter schools and siding with the teachers' unions that oppose their expansion. And that has left some Black and Latino families feeling betrayed. What took you so long? The whole thing was a sham. The whole thing was temporary. They have no interest in improving the education system in inner cities. Educated public don't vote lockstep party for anybody. The Black vote, the Democrats get 91% of the Black vote. Why would Democrats do anything that would change that? Why would Democrats care about moving more Black families into higher income brackets by, you know, empowering them through education, inspiring them through a you can do it kind of attitude? Is there a Democrat out there that you can think of who's out there saying this is the greatest country in the world and you really just got to bust your hump and get out there and life is what you make of it and you can be anything you want to be? Hell no, there isn't a Democrat out there saying that. As a matter of fact, let me play you this clip of Mayor Pete Buttigieg. This clip is from 2011. It's a different type of Pete Buttigieg. But what he is saying here is true. It's not only, it's backed up by data and research that, and he's not saying, by the way, that it's the only thing. Just pay attention to that because there's an outrage piece over it. But listen to Mayor Pete talking about education and the importance of education in economically depressed areas of the country, and in particular in minority communities.
You know, the kids need to see evidence that education is going to work for them, right?
There you go.
So you see a lot of parts of
town. That's part of the motivation.
Yeah, because you're motivated because you believe that at the end of your educational process, there's a reward, there's a stable life, there's a job. And there are a lot of kids, especially the lower income minority neighborhoods, who literally just haven't seen it work. There isn't somebody they know personally who testifies to the value of education. So, yeah, you bet.
Now, he's got a good point there. If you're going to tell people that education leads to something good, there should be some examples of that in their neighborhood, in their communities. And unfortunately, those cases, those truths, because it does exist, are not highlighted by politicians, sadly, Mayor Pete. Now, that was 2011 Mayor Pete, and not 2019 running for president Mayor Pete. He's running for mayor of South Bend, Indiana back then. That uncontroversial comment led to a piece at theroot.com, which is a racist website. It's a race-based website, but it's, you can't call it racist because it's news from a black perspective, because now news has race. The headline, Pete Buttigieg is a lying MF. And then throughout it, he goes on to call him a lying MFer and F this. And it's a poorly written, angry piece. But he says, I want to be clear, Pete Buttigieg is a lying MFer. This is not a misunderstanding. It is not a misstatement. Pete Buttigieg went to the best education institutions in that America has to offer. Blah, 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 blah. He goes on to say that basically everything is race-based in this country. And it's all race. It's not that there aren't examples. It's not that people are not being highlighted. You know, the success stories are not being highlighted. It's not that. It's not that politicians are instilling in children a you can do it too attitude. And it doesn't have to be, you know, you can become the next Mark Zuckerberg. That's the biggest misconception. That's really where the Democrats live, is you probably can't become the next Mark Zuckerberg. You probably won't become a billionaire. You definitely won't become a billionaire. You probably won't become a multimillionaire, but you never know. You can certainly do better. And the way to do better is through education. Unfortunately, because of society and because of the left-wing manipulation of our culture, there seems to be two choices that they pay attention to and pretend that the rest doesn't matter. The left, I mean. It is either abject poverty or living like a rap mogul, living like Michael Bloomberg, living like being a full-blown billionaire. There's a lot of area in between. The objective, we used to be content as a country, not to, well, you're a failure unless you become a multimillionaire, used to be your parents would work hard and work with you and encourage you and try to get you to do better than they did. There was a contentment. All right, this is where we are in life. Our objective is to make sure that our children have better lives than we do. That used to be the way it is. Now it is either you go on to be a multi-billionaire or you're an oppressed victim. And don't bother trying if you can't become a multi-billionaire. That's essentially what Pete Buttigieg was talking about there. But now that leads to a long racist screed about white privilege and how Pete Buttigieg, doesn't know what's going on, doesn't really get what's happening. He says at the end, this is not just a lie of omission. It is a dangerous precedent. This is why institutional inequality persists. Not because of white hoods and racial slurs. It is because of the insidious double talk erases the problem of camouflaging it. Or embrace the problem by camouflaging it, because it is painted as a problem of black lethargy and not white apathy. It's not, Mayor Pete is not talking about black lethargy. He's talking about societal prioritization and the highlighting of only certain types of success, only certain degrees of success. Look, if you grew up in an apartment and you're able to, as an adult, buy a home, guess what? You're doing better than your parents did. And then you hope that your children can have a nicer home and a more comfortable life. Not everybody has to cross the billionaire finish line. But as we're talking about education, ending charter schools, as the leading Democrats are now promising to do, is going to do nothing to help that cause. In fact, it's going to send it in the other direction and make things worse for people, because it will again sap out that drive, sap out that inspiration. but they don't give a damn. Hispanic and Latino voters are wondering where this leaves them. Here's where it leaves you, Black and Hispanic voters, exactly where you are now. Democrats never really gave a damn. They took your vote for granted. Now, they took them a while to earn it, but they now take your vote for granted and have for a long time. They're not going to give a damn that you don't want charter schools gotten rid of. Their sugar daddies in the teachers' unions want them gone. They don't like the competition. They don't like the accountability, and they don't like showing up failing public schools. They don't like to show the alternative to the easy, lazy norm in the failing public schools. So if you're embarrassing your teachers' union donors, or you run risk of alienating some voters in solidly blue areas and solidly blue states, which one do you think you're going to choose? You're going to choose the people who are willing to cut you big fat checks and spend hundreds of millions of forced due dollars to get you elected. So be it. If it has to ruin another generation in this country, who cares? They don't give a damn. What are you going to do? Vote Republican? That's what they're thinking. Where are you going to go? You going to go vote Republican? Please. Yeah, that's what you get with blind loyalty to a party. Taken for granted and then taken advantage of. Congratulations. Everybody saw this telegraphed punch coming. Luckily for you, it's not too late. It's not too late, but it soon will be, depending on how you vote going forward. Lastly today, I just want to play this little humorous clip from President Trump pardoning the turkeys. One was named Bread and one was named Butter, and then they did a popularity poll, and Butter won. No, they really did. I mean, it was a fun joke social media poll, but Butter won. Butter is the most popular turkey out of Bread and Butter. And then we need to impeach Butter, because I think that the Russians had something to do with that election. But listen to the president make a joke. Again, remember all the stories you hear in the media about how outraged Donald Trump is, how angry he is. He's storming around the White House talking, mumbling to himself, pissed off and unable to think straight over all of these scandals weighing down on him. Does this sound like he's losing sleep at night?
Thankfully, Bread and Butter have been specially raised by the Jacksons to remain calm under any condition, which will be very important because they've already received subpoenas to appear in Adam Schiff's basement on Thursday. It's true. Hundreds of people have. It seems the Democrats are accusing me of being too soft on turkey. But Bread and Butter, I should note that unlike previous witnesses, you and I have actually met. It's very unusual. Very unusual.
Does that sound like a guy stressed out and wandering around and mumbling to himself? Does it really? Who are you going to believe? MSNBC, CNN, or your own lion ears? Oh. That's all we have time for today. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving. Tomorrow is Tryptophan Thursday. Gorge yourselves. We'll have a best of interview up, and I'll do a little intro for it and whatnot. And if anything massive breaks, I'll throw in some stuff about that. But hopefully it won't. Hopefully we'll all have a nice, peaceful, and calm Thanksgiving and Black Friday. May all your sales flyers be, all the stuff you want on sale be fully stocked. And may you barely get trampled as you go out and try and buy it. There'll be another show on Friday as well. And then we're back to regular programming on Monday. So if you don't listen the next couple of days, it'll be understandable. But as long as you're back here on Monday, it's all good. And don't forget to tell your friends and your family and all that good stuff. Most importantly, I'm sorry about the Lions. Happy Thanksgiving. The Daily Daily Caller podcast is produced by Derek Hunter. Director, Derek Hunter. It's executive produced by Derek Hunter. Senior producer is Derek Hunter. Supervising producer is Derek Hunter. Technical producer is Derek Hunter. It was edited by Derek Hunter. The audio mixing was done by Derek Hunter. Hair and makeup provided by Derek Hunter's Pillow and Soap. Production assistance provided by The Cats. This joke was submitted by listener Christopher Flatten. And this joke is funny because it's true.